This podcast of the Radio Cafe comes to you via radiocafe.org, where you can find more information and many other podcasts. Technical support comes from Studio X, providing website design, hosting, e-commerce, and social media marketing, serving Santa Fe to the world since 1994. Find out more at studiox.com. I'm delighted now to welcome to the Radio Cafe Teresa Younger. She's president and CEO of the Ms. Foundation in New York City, and Sarah Giorce, who is the program director for NewMexicoWomen.org. Welcome, ladies, to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And Teresa is here on the occasion of an event that's happening tonight, put on by NewMexicoWomen.org, called Power and Possibility, Investing in New Mexican Women and Girls. And this is an annual event, and we'll be talking about it in a little while. But I wanted to ask you, Teresa, you were here, you have this amazing position as director of the Ms. Foundation, which funds all kinds of projects all over the country that benefit women and girls,
Yes. Including
here in New Mexico, but really all over the place. Mm-hmm. And I want to ask you about kind of your own trajectory. Like, when did you become aware of your own mission to work for justice?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. So I'm an Air Force brat. And I oftentimes say that I knew more about farming than feminism and more about Girl Scouts than Gloria Steinem. And so I grew up in North Dakota. I grew up in a very rural area. And I thought that I understood justice. I really was a Girl Scout. I bleed green at the end of the day. And the idea of fighting for giving voice to people who don't have voice and working on issues around social justice and being committed to making the world a better place was something that I had always grown up with. My father being in the service, you know, always reflected the fact that we had to give back to community. I will tell you, though, it was when I started a nonprofit in New York that I actually realized that there were many ways to impact the lives of people and to make changes in our communities. So I was running a program, a youth serving program for kids living in urban environments. And it was a program that children came into the program in when they were 9, and they continued the program through high school. And about 3 years into the program, a 12-year-old came to the program, and she was pregnant.
A 12-year-old.
12 years old. And I was, at that time, maybe 26 years old, okay? So, and the mother was younger than me, her mother, and I couldn't understand how she was pregnant. And I called the mother to talk to the mother about this, because the child was in this residential camp with me. And the mother, you know, said to me, "Well, she doesn't even have a boyfriend." And I said, "That's irrelevant." And she said, "Well, she must have gotten pregnant at camp." And I said, "She's been here 3 days and she's 3 months pregnant." And the mother said, "Well, you know, I don't understand how this could happen." And I realized right there and then, regardless of the amazing supports that we can give to people, we actually have to change the policies. Because what this young woman needed was comprehensive sex education that made her aware of her body, because that was really important. And I spent 2 more years working in that program, doing really amazing work. And I had children who ended up being on the wrong side of the street, and so they were in the drug zone, and the police would do sweeps, and these children would end up in the prison pipeline, school-to-prison pipeline. I left there thinking I needed to do more work around reproductive rights and justice for women and girls, and the juvenile justice community to figure out what I wanted to do. And I went to the ACLU, and I ran the ACLU of Connecticut for 3.5 years, right before and then after 9/11.
Oh my goodness.
And let me just tell you this bit too. I have a recreation degree because I was going to run children's programs and change the world. And so I didn't have a law degree, and I don't have a law degree. And here I was, wanting to impact constitutional law and working with attorneys and working with community members about what was going on. And and after 9/11, I said it was like getting a master's degree in constitutional law and what the Constitution does and what it doesn't do and the importance of legislation and policy that impact our lives. And really enjoyed it and loved that work and worked there for a long time. Also worked at the National ACLU office, where I got a national perspective of what was happening across the country. And it really gave me some insight as to the work I'm doing now. And then most recently, I was the head, the executive director of the Women's Commission, the Permanent Commission on the Status of Women in Connecticut, which is a state public policy agency funded by the people in the state to make sure that they are, that legislators are informed about the work that they are doing and how it affects women in their communities. And while I was doing that work, I met some of the most amazing and incredible women and men who were trying to make their lives and their communities stronger and better. And I thought to myself, this is really what I want to be doing. I want to be able to influence and advocate for the voices of those whose voices don't get heard. And a year and a half ago, the Ms. Foundation position opened up, and I jumped on board.
One of the things that a lot of people talk about is grassroots change and top-down change. Mm-hmm. And both of them are necessary. Maybe grassroots change comes first. Political leadership never happens if there aren't grassroots changes. What are some of the real changes that you have already seen in the course of your life?
Wow. I think, you know, good and bad real changes I've seen. I live in a state in Connecticut and I work in New York. And some of the changes I've seen in that kind of adult phase of my life have been around Connecticut has paid sick time for people who are working, and it's cumulative by the number of hours you work over time. So you can earn up to 7 paid sick days, which means you can take care of yourself and your family. I think that's been pretty key. I spent time working on marriage equality and have been working on marriage equality rights for a very, very long time and gay rights for a long time. I've spent a considerable amount of time working on and amplifying the voices of women of color. And I think we've seen the impact, both this election cycle and in past election cycles, of how important it is to get more women into leadership roles and how important it is to have those women supporting other women and what that needs to look like. So I would say at the end of the day, I've been fortunate because I actually grew up after, you know, I grew up after Title IX, after Title VII. I grew up after Roe v. Wade. So I grew up in this time when many things were already on the table. We actually have 2 generations of men who have had mothers and sisters and partners in their lives who have had access to education and health care and housing and jobs, which, you know, wasn't the case before. And so they are anticipating in many ways that their wives, their daughters, their sisters will have the same kinds of opportunities that they had, which means that the movement towards equality has more people to be part of that movement.
One thing that I've noticed here in New Mexico, and I'd love to hear your perceptions about what the rest of the country looks like, is that there is some incredibly effective and smart organizing going on that is led by women of color, young women of color. Describe to us what that looks like to you, how it's different from other kinds of leadership. What are some of the things that these women, young women, women of color are doing?
So when I started at the Ms. Foundation a year and a half ago, I went on a listening tour. I spent the first year out on the ground talking with these young, amazing women of color, women in these leadership roles doing all sorts of work across the country. And at the Ms. Foundation, we fund in the areas of health, safety, and economics, justice. And some of what I saw while I was out there and what makes it so different is that we actually approach our funding and who we identify with a sense of trust. We believe and we trust that the solutions are going to come from those who are most experiencing the problems. Mm-hmm. And we trust that they are going to make mistakes and have failures, but more importantly, they're going to learn from those failures and we're going to be able to move forward. And I will tell you, one of the most amazing kinds of leadership that I saw while I was traveling around the country last year actually was right here in New Mexico with Young Women United. Where on the listening tour, I came to Albuquerque, and we traveled down to Roswell, New Mexico, And this is the impact of just little dollars, right? We traveled down to Roswell, where there was a gathering of young parents and community members who were celebrating the one-year anniversary at that time of the passage of legislation that allowed students to leave school and come back and graduate on time, kind of like a family medical leave for high school students. And a young woman came in to talk at that event, and she said, I am late today. She said, but, you know, this has been an amazing year. I graduated from high school. I married the father of my child, and I'm late today because it was my first day of college. And then she went on to talk to everybody in the room about what that experience was for her, to find her voice, to advocate for what she needed, and to advocate for her children and her community. And so she talked about how she has a responsibility to get an education, to role model for her child, and how important it was for them to come together as a community and not berate young parents, but tell them that they have a voice and an opportunity to continue moving forward. And so she then was the inspiration for this community. And Young Women United gave them that platform to come together. And Ms., the grant that we were able to give to them, helped underwrite the cost for Young Women United to drive to Roswell to help these and train these young women to be organizers. And now, in the long run, right, this young woman who started out by saying, why can't I graduate with my friend? This is a decision that I have made. I value my education. I want to understand how to advocate for things. It's unfair, right? I want to bring my voice to the table. I want people to see me as a success, not as a failure. All of that, you know, was inspired and stimulated, and people could see that that was a successful role modeling. And she's 19. And right. So when she's, right, she will vote in her first election, and she will be an advocate in her community. And people will look to her as a leader in her community because she was able to lend her voice to something that so many of them felt was important.
We're talking to Teresa Younger of the Ms. Foundation. Sarah, when Teresa was talking about, you know, you have to trust that the people who have the problems are the best ones to solve them, I heard you sort of nod. Is that also your philosophy at NewMexicoWomen.org?
Absolutely. We celebrate and work with so many different organizations around the state that are really led by the people most affected, like Teresa was saying. Teresa mentioned there was the YWU Young Women United group, and they worked with the Coalition for Choice. In addition to doing this whole work about reframing teen pregnancy and destigmatizing it, to launch what the Respect Albuquerque Women campaign in 2013, where they actually defeated a bill that was out in the city of Albuquerque to ban abortion at 20 weeks. And they did that through a very sophisticated and smart communication strategy. And basically their messaging wasn't about, is it right or is it wrong? It was about how do we keep this conversation at the level of the family, the doctor, and the people, and the women and girls who are affected by it. And so their seat at the table for the Coalition of Choice, YWU in particular, really was a nationally recognized example of a young women of color-led group that had made serious policy change that affected the lives of women and girls for the better. And out of that has grown what is being launched by them at this moment called the Respect New Mexico Women Network. And it's all those same groups trying to contain, and it's not a policy effort per se, but for instance, at this current legislative session, they're trying to contain the messaging around reproductive justice at the Roundhouse right now, because there are always attacks every session on women's reproductive health and rights. And so this is about the communications and the talking points and the messaging and the narrative, basically, about what we mean by women's reproductive health. And so that should be celebrated as well.
You, Teresa, it sounds like you had a pretty nice childhood with the support that you needed with Girl Scouts. I mean, I don't know too much about it, but how do you feel like you developed the leadership skills you have at such a young age? I mean, you were running a nonprofit when you were in your 20s.
Yeah, that's a really good question. I actually feel like life is not supposed to be easy, and my life was not easy by any means, but people had tougher lives than I did, and I too, you know, match the philosophy of Ms., which is we have to trust the grassroots to bring voice to the issues that are most important to them, and we have to surround ourselves with people who will support what actions need to be taken. So I was very fortunate. I did. The Girl Scouts really did amazingly give me many opportunities to develop leadership skills and to have opportunities to do things I otherwise wouldn't have gotten a chance to do. But more importantly, what it did for me is it put other women in front of me that I could aspire to be like. And I think that is really, really key.
Yeah.
Is, you know, somebody who says to you, you're a leader. Somebody who says to you, why not you, right? Somebody who says, oh, you see, that's a problem. What are you going to do to fix it? And, you know, I think I was really fortunate because I did have those people around me, whether it was my family or whether it was members of the community. I had those people around me who said, if not you, who? If not now, when? And I felt like I had an obligation and a responsibility to make the world a better place. And you know, I believe that now. I believe that we are doing that at the Ms. Foundation for Women by identifying grassroots leaders and then supporting them, not on projects, but supporting their leadership through general operating grants.
One of the realities of injustice, whether it be injustice in America, whether it be racial injustice or injustice against women, whatever it is when it goes on and on and on, it can become disheartening and it can engender really large amounts of anger in the hearts of people, men, women, black, whatever color. What do you do if you're one of those angry people, if you are trying to work for justice, but you have this, and because it's reinforced every day, every time there's another Eric Garner or Freddie Gray or Sandra Bland, or you go on and on and on and on, that sense of rage can increase. What? How do you handle that? How do you help people handle that?
Yeah. You know, it's very real. I oftentimes, you know, there are some mornings where it's really hard to get out of bed. And it can be really frustrating. But what we have to do is put those energies into something constructive. And we have to decide and determine that our voices are going to matter and that we need to come together, not in a place of anger, although I do believe anger is good. I think, you know, you can't make change happen unless you get pissed off first. And so, you know, I think that change is what has put together Black Lives Matter. It's what has women saying our lives matter. It's the respect campaign that's going on. It's people saying enough is enough. And so we have to, in this process, own our responsibility to continue to educate people, to hold people accountable at the end of the day, and to decide that we want to put together an image of a better, more equal, more equitable world, more just world, and that it's not going to happen soon. Mm-hmm. One of the things, yeah, I say all the time, right, our history books are poorly written. They have written out so many people, so many stories. So we have to fix that, and we have to develop a picture for a future. And it's not going to be easy. We're going to have to look at it over the long haul, and then we're going to have to hold people accountable for helping us institute those changes. And I say to people all the time, there is a group in your community somewhere that can use your help you direct your energies into making change happen. And when you have those changes, that those ripples happening on the grassroots level, they will ripple their way up and we will see the change that we need to see in this country.
A lot of change, a lot of grassroots change happens through organizing, and tools of organizing have evolved in the digital age, and people are talking about, you know, the Arab Spring and social media and all the kinds of things that are happening through social media. And I wondered if you could comment on what is effective for what. I was reading this article about the, it was a while back, but it was an article about the Greensboro Four, those four young men who first sat in at the lunch counter in Woolworths and refused to leave until they were served, and they weren't served, and, you know, the rest is history. And the point of this particular article was that those four young men knew each other very well. Mm-hmm. And it was that knowledge of each other and that friendship that was very deep and went beyond what the kind of like Facebook friend kind of friend mm-hmm. that brought them their strength to stay together. That's one thing, but there's all of these other kinds of associations that we have, and this is something that I'm guessing you've quite thought a lot about.
Yeah. So, you know, formulating networks, developing relationships is key and instrumental to any kind of movement. And I think we can't write off kind of new media in this process because I think it does give people a way to participate, a way to ask questions and to feel like they are part of something, but it can't be the only way. At the Ms. Foundation for Women, we actually have about 100 grantees across the United States, and we bring them together. So groups like Young Women United or Tewa Women or Olay are coming together with groups in Colorado who can share strategies and stories, who can support each other in what's going on, who can start asking some of those key questions about when do you get burned out and what does that look like. And so, you know, I think it's really important, and we do this at the Ms. Foundation on a multitude of levels, but I, you know, as a woman of color myself, I, you know, make sure that I reach out to every single one of our grantees to introduce myself, to make sure we have a relationship with each other. I build my networks around myself and around the work we're doing. And I think we have to get out of our comfort zones a little bit and make sure that we are building relationships where they need to be built so that we can come together and find like-minded people, but also find the strength so that we can continue to do the work that needs to get done.
What does getting out of your comfort zone look like for you? Like, is there a recent example?
Yeah. I think in many ways, I'm an introvert. I'm, you know, a Black woman who grew up in North Dakota. So getting out of my comfort zone is being in Connecticut and traveling around the country. But I think a lot of being in my comfort zone is I'm not an expert in women's rights or the issues affecting the lives of women. I'm taking and valuing my own personal experiences, the experiences of my sisters and my mother and my brothers and my father, and saying those experiences have value, and so I'm going to help carry those voices and those values forward in the work that I'm able to do. So I, you know, travel. I don't know the New Mexico state legislature, but I do know that state legislatures have an important role to play. I don't know the city council in New York City, but I do know how important it is for us to have a young women's initiative in New York City that ensures the voices of young women get heard in that community. So, I mean, I oftentimes find that I walk into rooms that I don't know anybody and have to identify who my tribe is going to be, so that I can be around those like-minded people.
We're talking to Teresa Younger of the Ms. Foundation, and we are here because there's an event that's happening tonight called Power and Possibility, Investing in New Mexican Women and Girls. It's presented by NewMexicoWomen.org, and Teresa, you will be there, and also Patricia Trujillo, who is at Northern New Mexico College, and Andrea Serrano, who is an Albuquerque poet and director of the Olay Education Fund, will all be there. It's tonight. If people want tickets, I don't know, it's kind of full already, but if people want to go, what should they do?
If people want to find out more, they can call the New Mexico Community Foundation.
Okay.
505-820-6860.
And the website over there is newmexicowomen.org. Anything that either of you want to add before we go today?
I would just like to add, Teresa talked about her role at the Women's Commission, the Commission on Status of Women in Connecticut. I just wanted to add that NewMexicoWomen.org actually exists because the current administration has, when it came into office, defunded the Commission on Status of Women in New Mexico. And so they left this huge gap around who is actually looking out for and advocating for women and girls on a state front with a statewide lens. And so NewMexicoWomen.org, one of the things that we're trying to do is fill that gap by educating, leading, and investing through our strategy. And I just want to emphasize the importance of women's funds and their specific role in the larger movement for justice and for human rights across the country. And Ms. Foundation was the first women's fund ever to be directing resources towards women and girls issues. And now there's over 161 women's funds all across the globe. And at an annual level, investing over $350 million in improving the lives of women and girls. And so we really want to drive that home. What does that look like here in New Mexico? And we're not talking about investing in law enforcement, investing in building more prisons for women and girls. We're really talking about investing in the economic, emotional, mental, spiritual, and physical and reproductive health and wellness of women and girls in every corner of the state. And that's what we really want to emphasize for, at our event tonight.
Sarah Giorsi is Program Director of NewMexicoWomen.org. Teresa Younger is President and CEO of the Ms. Foundation in New York. Thank you both so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. To support the program, you can go to radiocafe.org. Many thanks to StudioX.com for their technical support and web design.